Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. How about if we shift it to design power, architectural design? Now, all of us at various times in our lives have either seen homes or buildings, and we just stand in front of them and go, wow, that's incredible. Have you ever gone to historical sites and seeing the way people lived a long time ago, done international travel, seeing archetypal demonstrations that just fascinate you? And you think, I think I'd like to do that at my house. Well, my guest today, Ashley Rooney, is a woman that loves architecture. And we're going to be finding out not only about her wonderful book, Today's Historic Interiors, but we're going to find out how this became a part of her life and how significant it is in the actual house that she has lived in for a long time. Ashley, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. It's good to be back on, Donna.
Well, Ashley, it's a delight. You're a very, very interesting lady. When I found out about this book that Schiffer Publishing puts out on, today's historic interiors, I thought, oh, this is really going to be interesting, and it met my expectations, and then some. But I really was intrigued with you, because you actually, many years ago, you and your husband bought an old, old house, and you excitedly said, oh, this is just going to be wonderful, and he's looking at it with his practical, manly self, saying, you have got to be kidding. But it worked out just fine. Tell us what caused you to get involved with personally doing a historical home and renovating it.
I think probably because I grew up with my parents. And if you think of us, a lot of us come growing up with Depression-age parents. They did a lot of work around the house. And my parents worked on old houses. And so I grew up with a love for old houses and the romance, the balconies, the funny doors, the mysterious old attics, the places you didn't know where they led to, the window seats. There's something about a window seat. I always think of Sarah Crewe. And when I found this house that I still live in to this day after 40 years, my husband, you're right, had absolute fit. And it took me all summer to persuade him that it would be perfect for us living on the historic route, the Paul Revere Road in Lexington, Massachusetts.
Wow.
And even though the house was a total dilapidated horror at that point. We moved in. Some of my friends said, oh, what a lovely house this will be. Others said, oh, my God, why did you ever do anything so silly? And we moved in with its tiny little bathrooms, and it still has small bathrooms, I have to admit that. And it still has radiators that sing. And it still has its window seats and its great long windows that look out on this historic street. And it just blooms. And I could feel it almost talking to me as we took off the old paper and the many layers of paint. It's wonderful to live in an old house and think of who lived there in the past. And when we found the hidden doorway or the broken little medicine bottles out in the garden, it was, you know, a very exciting thing for my children, for us, to think, this house has roots. This house has been around for generations of people. And I found the women who planted the peonies in 1913, and I still have those peonies that were planted in 1913, older than my parents.
It's just really amazing. Now, the style of your home, what kind of a style? When was it built? And what style is it?
Okay, supposedly we've been able to get back as far as 1830.
It
was a salt box, and it was the ne'er-do-well on the block. It was one of the first houses here. It's probably the oldest house on this block, and it's surrounded by great, big, glorious Victorians, now filled again with young people and lots of young children, and I'm the only house without the barn. And somewhere, they kept the original owners. We went and found the town records. People kept stepping in, the town officials, and taking it away, and they called them the ne'er-do-wells and giving it to somebody else. In the 1860s, somebody got some money, and they put in pillars, and they put on a third floor, and they put on a slate roof, and they did that. But still, when we moved in, we found that the kitchen was really, it was probably a lean-to years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We had a lot of work and that type of thing. There are still all sorts of staircases in it. And I know the people who come into it after I go will probably say, we got to take all these stairways, the front and back stairs, that my kids ran around the house in a vast circle up to the third floor all the way
mm-hmm.
down to the basement.
You know, the
probably take
salt
them out.
Yeah.
But
the salt box style was a particular period, like you said, and it was built, and it looked like a salt box for the salt box of the times. You know, we think of our salt boxes today, they're circular, and the old Morton salt kind of storage box, but really, salt boxes were more like the kosher salt boxes that you buy in the store. They were square. So
right,
they didn't have a lot of exciting persona to them, but they usually were two-story, weren't they?
Or a story and a half. This house was a story and a half. We found that.
Ah,
and it was totally,
okay.
And it was totally heated by the fireplaces.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. To me, architecture is so interesting. Because, first of all, the photos in this book are just breathtakingly beautiful. But a lot of people that are interested in historical homes, and we just recently attended a social event. It was a reunion of type of a group that my husband had performed with a few years back. And the fellows that put it on, who were the director and producer for the programs that had been done by this very large group years ago, they had purchased an antique house in the northern part of the city of Tacoma. And the northern section of the city of Tacoma, here in the Pacific Northwest, has all of these Victorian houses. I mean, these were huge, huge places. And you wonder, how in the world did people even get up down the stairs? They have these long stairways that go from the street all the way up to the houses. So you literally have to climb up anywhere from 15 to 20 steps. It's not like unlike certain areas in Los Angeles. You have to climb up these steps to get to the front door of the house. And they have been renovating this place, and they have been asked by the Historical Society, because the house is like 150 years old, and to renovate it. I said, we're going to renovate it first before we put it in the Historical Society book, because otherwise we can't make some of the changes. So they've been gradually going through doing the electrical work and upgrading the kitchen, and it was more fun listening to their stories about what they found that had to be fixed, that previous people that had lived there, it was an artist, sort of like an artist group that stayed in this house. There was a man that owned it, and he would rent out the rooms to people. And the stories about the roof leaking and all kinds of stuff, it was just magical. This house had such a persona to it because of it being so old. Whoever had lived in it at one time in the beginning, it had some money. And so this stairway, the banisters on the stairway going up, and the way the windows were positioning to get a beautiful view of the water. I mean, it's just incredible. Now, in this book, with the architecture, you mention a number of different styles. And I wanted to address some of the styles because I think everywhere, whether you're in Arizona, any place in the United States, you're going to find a house that has a history to it. And it all depends on where you live, doesn't it?
Right, but you can see threads throughout the United States. Like the Southern Revival style was, it spread out through the United States at that point as the railroad was built. And so there are remnants of it in the Southwest and stuff like that. The shingle style, which was a Boston style under Richardson and so forth, spread over to California and up in your Northwest. Oh, it's not so much in the Southwest or the South because they have different needs. But it is fascinating how these styles go through. Here, I mean, where I live in a very old house, all my windows are mainly on the south or the east side of the house. Why? Because they had no heat. All they had was the fireplaces. They needed that sun to come through. And as we go into Leeds revival houses and, you know, that, people are now beginning to think more and more of the use of the sun and what we can do to warm up a house without using oil and gas.
Now, but let me ask you a question. When it came to these historic houses, I know in Europe with the castles, they and there are some places here like the Hearst Castle that followed the same patterning, and there's some other places that are quite palatial. They had monstrous fireplaces, and in Europe, the fireplaces were so big that a chimney flue to go up through them. They actually had what you'd call bars in there so someone could step up because their fireplaces would go up the equivalent of like four stories, maybe more.
Yeah.
So to be able to clean them, to be able to get the creosote out, a chimney sweep had to be able to climb up inside. But I see so many of them having narrower chimneys. Is there that difference in the United States?
I'm not an expert on the chimneys. I know there are many different kinds of chimneys. Here, my chimneys, and they're very old, and I'm worrying about them falling apart, they go through three stories. No, they go through four because they're already down to the basement. I would think somebody probably had a long brush. They didn't send a person.
Okay. This is something I wondered because depending on the time frame you look at, sometimes those chimneys were extremely small, and like you say, there is a major concern because of the mortar and the age of your house that you have. That is going to be a major project to be able to take care of that so that it is not going to fall down, so that it is going to maintain its integrity. Let's talk about the dormers in a home. And, of course, even in modern-day homes, there are often dormers. But I loved the way dormers were used in certain homes. And there is a home, the Nantucket Cottage. This is a cottage. I looked at it, and I said, oh, quaint little college, huh? It's amazingly big. How big is this Nantucket College, do you know? Cottage, excuse me.
No, I don't know offhand.
But it's very large.
That's a modern, obviously been modernized, and they've done a beautiful job with it, the architect. The architect, who was that? Matthew Moger. And really done a nice job. That looks like about 3,000 certainly square feet. But a lot of these old houses have been revised and restored and made bigger, unless they're like in my house where they're in an historic district where you can't. And here, you probably have that out there, too. Here in Boston and area, we have a lot of historic districts. So that you cannot go touch the outside of a house.
Well, that's here. I don't know about other parts of the country, and maybe some of my listeners would, because I know there are people that just absolutely love dealing with historic buildings. But here in our area of Tacoma, once your place is made or put on the listing of historic homes, it takes years to be able to go in and even change the plumbing on the silly thing.
It really
is a challenge, and that's why these people that bought this house that is definitely going to be on the historic register, they're saying, we're not putting it on there until we upgrade everything, which means at times even taking out walls so they can upgrade the wiring. A lot of these old places, the wiring is very, very dangerous to work with.
I just rewired my house. Yes.
Yeah, and the
thing is, the historic districts, everybody is very different, and the rules that they have here, at least, you can't change the outside. You can do what you want in the inside. Which is nice. So, for instance, I would assume the person coming into my house would probably modernize it, want to air condition it even, because air conditioning is much more popular these days than it was in the past.
Oh, absolutely, especially with your hot, humid summers. No question about that.
Right.
So these are things
that people are going to want to do. Yeah, but I look
in
some of these old factories that they've redone, and I have a few of them images in the book.
Yes, you do.
They try to keep the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's quite lovely. So you have a feeling of the roots of this country.
Mm-hmm.
And what I love doing about this book was, just in writing about it all, is kind of reliving the history through the architecture,
mm-hmm.
and watching how this country grew. And you see these, like you talk about, the extravagant, flamboyant Victorian interiors. I mean, here in Newport, Rhode Island, which people know, I mean, they had so much money in the 1910s, their gas jets sprayed perfume over the women in the dining room to keep it, because they didn't bathe as much as they should.
Oh, my.
But, I mean, and those houses were only open for 6 weeks. And you think, but it was supposedly one of the ladies, I don't know, remember, it was a Mrs. Astor, Mrs. Vanderbilt, she went through $90,000 worth of perfume that summer. And, you know, and I think, oh, this is wonderful, you know, thinking how the different people lived over the years. It's fascinating.
It really is.
And
at that time, too, Ashley, there was no income tax.
Right, so they had much more money.
Yeah, they had a phenomenal amount of money. They were able to bring over artisans. You go through the Biltmore, you go through what we call the American castles that have been historically preserved. And you look at the Italian artistry that is done, depending on the style they chose, the woodworking that was done by hand, and literally the thousands of people that were employed because of people wanting these things. Everything from specialty glass to working with stone to having these magnificent friezes put up. It really gave employment to a tremendous amount of people, because at that time, economically, that's why it's called the Golden Age. There was that freedom to use that money in any way you want. And let's face it, other than burying it out in the yard, what a joy that perfume company must have had to have somebody come in with a $90,000 order. Woohoo! You think I wouldn't jump up and down? Man alive, that is just thrilling. You brought up a wonderful comment about old buildings. Now, here in the Pacific Northwest, in downtown Tacoma, there was an old manufacturing building. Through the years, they'd put in antique stores. I mean, this was an old, old building. Finally, someone decided, let's convert this building into apartments. Let's create lofts. Well, my goodness. It just changed, created a change in the downtown area that was wonderful, and there are people that love to live in that kind of an environment. And just like you said they do in Boston, they kept the integrity of the outside of the building, and they gutted the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Just went in and gutted the whole thing, because obviously you have to, again, upgrade the wiring, redo the floors, but they kept the flavor to it. You talk about the Liberty Hotel. And I'm looking, and this is just amazing.
That's
it's
phenomenal.
In Massachusetts. Oh, this place is architecturally massive. It really reflects that. But when they show the photos of what they did on the inside, tell us about this hotel.
Oh, it is glorious. It was originally the Charles Street Jail in the Beacon Hill neighborhood of Boston, and it was completed in 1851. And it kept many criminals there for many years, because Boston certainly had their criminals, and it was considered one of the best styles of Boston granite-style architecture of the mid-19th century. It was closed in the 1970s, around there, after 120 years of use. And in 2007, it was remodeled as a luxury hotel. And today, oh, it is done so beautifully. The jail's former exercise yard is a private and beautifully landscaped courtyard. As you go into the central rotunda of the jail, it is now, you walk into that rotunda, which goes all the way up, and you can see where there would have been prison cells all the way around it. There are gorgeous bars, lovely restaurants, named with a sense of humor as you would go around there. And there's the hotel attached. The restaurant is called The Clink. The bar is known as the Alibi Bar. And the preserved central rotunda of the jail forms the lobby and the public spaces. And it features the building's trademark windows and the historic catwalks. It's all there. And you walk in there and you could see the old building, and yet it's done modern style, and it's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
And it's filled with young people.
it's accepted. Yeah, it's fascinating how not only did they keep the integrity of the exterior, but they also utilized the interior. I mean, when you think of a jail, and at the time that it was built, their strongest component was bricks. And so you had these real thick brick walls, and there was concrete involved as well. But they kept that. It adds to the charisma of the place, and someone might say, gee, Donna, you're nuts. How could an old jail have charisma? Well, their lighting, they have these huge, huge, beautiful windows that have this magnificent patterning of trees in them. It's just, it's exquisite. And it's just really a feast for the eyes, but what fun. Do they know anything about ghosts? Do they have any ghostly situations that have ever occurred there?
I didn't run across any ghosts, but I expect there must be in there. I thought one of the other interesting old buildings that was public was it was an old African-American school built during the Reconstruction in Washington, D.C., which has now become lovely modern condos. And I thought they did a beautiful job of converting it into private space.
Mm-hmm.
And to use that stuff. I mean, when you talk about energy conservation and all our worries about energy efficiency, part of the energy that we don't think about is once we've built a building, we've put a lot of energy into it. If we can reuse it and renovate it so it can be used for modern time, we are conserving energy. We are conserving all those old products, the bricks that were made many years ago, the granite that was dug, and so forth, which is a wonderful use of things and give us an awareness of our history and of where we all came from, which I think is why we love to go to Europe. We see those old castles and we marvel. But we, too, have our castles and our old buildings.
Yes,
I love
the
candy factory, that was done up. And they've kept the inside, they kept the old copper kettles to remind people. Once Necco wafers were made here. This is great. Great stuff when you think about it.
It is. It's wonderful. And I think it's a great way of sharing history with kids. Because they have, even adults, they don't even many times have the interest in studying history or being aware of how we got to where we are. there was an evolutionary pattern we went through. Now, one of the greatest architects that is spoken of is Frank Lloyd Wright. And I can remember doing an interview with someone that really was into the history about this architect that was way ahead of his time, saying that the tools that he worked with at the time that he built his houses, which were just very dramatic, very dynamic, the people that occupy the houses in today's world really had to upgrade a lot because he didn't have certain things available. But you've got a Usonian bathroom that is on this, that's in this book of today's historic interiors from one of his homes, and the design of the home is just beautiful, I think. It's exquisitely elegant in its lines and in its style, and it blends beautifully in the environment that it's in. It just is there. It just looks like it belongs there. And that was one of the things that he was known about. Talk to us a little bit about Frank Lloyd Wright.
Oh, we could go on forever about Frank Lloyd Wright. I've been to the park out in Illinois and Taliesin out in the Southwest, and I've ducked. The ceilings were so low, and I'm quite tall. He didn't make it easy to live in many of these houses, I think, is what I would say. They're beautiful to look at. In certain ways, they're somewhat impractical.
Mm-hmm.
Very artistic, but impractical. And I certainly found that in his house out in the Southwest, people sort of slept outside. I mean, yes, there's the weather to sleep outside there, but it wasn't always the most comfortable thing. This bathroom, and I think this is in upstate, this is in New York, Dobbs Ferry. It's interesting, very interesting, what the renovator, the designer, did to it to make it work now for this house, because it's a lovely little house.
Mm-hmm.
But the bathroom did no longer worked for modern day bathrooms. People want nicer bathrooms.
Absolutely.
Than what they had in the 1930s and 40s. Sometimes I see modern-day bathrooms. I'm amazed. They're bigger than my living room. You think, whoo, what are people doing? But Frank Lloyd Wright got us all rethinking about houses, that we didn't need these great, big, flamboyant Victorians, that perhaps we could do simpler. We could bring the light in. One of the things I find with the old shingles is they can be quite dark. Beautiful woodwork, but they're dark houses when you go
mm-hmm.
into them. And he brought that light in, and you feel the integration of the house with the land, which is wonderful.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that when they are working with his homes, like you said, they're having to upgrade and do things. Well, I know we're just about out of time. For those of you that just absolutely adore redoing houses, or if you are fascinated with history and you want to know more about architecture, this book, Today's Historic Interiors, which is put out by Schiffer, S-C-H-I-F-F-E-R, publishing company, you'd want to have this in your library, because I'll tell you, you would go through this and say, I think I'd like this, I think I'd like that. But it's not just giving you an insight into architecture. It's giving you information on how there is a progression of adaptability that, let's say in the 1700s, nobody would have even given a second thought to, because they were dealing with the materials at hand. Today, we have so many options that our ancestors didn't have, and many of these homes that so frequently in the past would have just been bulldozed. Oh, well, we'll just get rid of it. Instead of saying, okay, let's take a look at this. Can we make this the way we want it to be so it's beautiful and keep that history with it? It's really quite a challenge, and I've known more than one person that has taken on this project, like Ashley Rooney, along with her husband, did so many years ago, and they're loving it still because it represents so much to them. And if you do, like she did with her family, got the family involved. Let's check out the history. Let's see what we can learn. Wow, what an adventure you can end up having. Ashley Rooney, I want to thank you very much for being with me today. It's been a delight. I'm an avid person. I love history. I love unique architecture, and I love the stories that go with it. Thank you for being with me today.
Thank you, Donna. Have a wonderful day. Go and enjoy history and architecture.
Bye-bye. Definitely will. For those of you listening, this is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break for a moment. When we come back, I've got more good things to share with you. So we'll be back in just a moment. Check out, again, today's historic interiors. Step back in time, move forward with opportunity and change. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Awaken to love, gifts from spirit. For those of you in Washington State, an incredible event is happening this Saturday, September 15th at 6 p.m. at the Roosevelt Hotel in Seattle. This is a fundraiser for the Ascension Foundation's healing and educational programs. Guest speaker Dr. Pat Basile leads the program. You'll be able to experience messages from loved ones with Monty Burgess and watch internationally renowned apport medium Michael Shane demonstrate his amazing abilities of materializing objects. This and much more, including a silent auction and wine tasting, you'll be able to enjoy. Tickets are $75 per person. To pre-register or for more details, contact 800-508-6437 or email info@michaelshane.com. This is a one-of-a-kind event you won't want to miss. This is Donna Sebo. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open. Give me a call at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. All I need from you is your first name or your initial. And then after that, just let me tell you whatever it is that I perceive. And, of course, you're welcome to ask me a question about anything you like. The other day, I was talking to you about dogs and detection of cancer, and I said I wanted to continue the story about how dogs have been, you know, used in discerning cancer. And I was so impressed with this story because to make a change with science, to change a modality of understanding, it doesn't happen overnight. Even in today's world, with all of our communication, etc., certain attitudes prevail. And a lot of people just said, it's ridiculous. There's no way that an animal can detect cancer. However, there were two doctors, Dr. H. Williams and A. Pembroke, that said they knew that animals had this capability. And they felt that studies should be done to show this. Well, after they had made their report, it was about 4 years later in Florida, where there was a Tallahassee dermatologist, a Dr. Armand Cognetta, and he was working long hours. This man was thinking about a patient on his drive home. It wasn't unusual for him to see 100 people in a day. Can you wrap your mind about that? 100 patients a day. He was involved with skin cancer. So here are all these people that he's dealing with. And he said, as a doctor, he's running through certain things in his head, certain details. He said, often the difference between a cancerous mole and a non-cancerous mole, there isn't any. You're really not going to be able to determine. Maybe there's a little bit of change in color. There might be a little bit of change in shape, but sometimes those changes just, it's a benign thing. It's just the body dealing with changes. And he said there's different types of skin cancer. It will develop differently. So he's, you know, going through this stuff in his head, and he's a little frustrated. Well, this one patient on this one afternoon, he did a biopsy of, and it wasn't dark. It wasn't an odd color. It wasn't oddly shaped. It had absolutely no definitive signs of cancer. However, when the biopsy of this particular mole was done, it definitely was malignant. Now, as a physician, he said, what am I going to do? This is just something, I can't believe it. We are missing a lot of things with people because there's nothing specific. We can have these generalities, but it doesn't mean that that's really what we need to know. Now, he was listening to the radio on his drive home, and they were talking about how a dog had led them to the body of a missing swimmer, and a thought occurred in his head. Now, he hadn't known anything about these other two researchers that had worked with dogs. He didn't know anything about them. And he said, I wonder if the same thing could be used with cancer. I wonder if cancer has a smell. I wonder if dogs could do this because their sense of smell is just so amazing. Now, he started searching, and at the time he really didn't have access to the sophistication of the Internet as we have today. And all he could find was a 5-paragraph letter to an editor in a publication called The Lancet. Nobody, and it had this story about these two doctors. And he said, you know what, I think I'm going to check this out. So he contacted a woman who was an expert dog trainer. In fact, she had been the former head of the Tallahassee Police Canine Department. And he knew her quite well. And he said, I would like for you to work with me on this project. Now, she had trained dogs to detect explosives, drugs, this type of thing. And this was very interesting to her. And she said, I have a schnauzer. His name is George. Why don't we use George for this experiment? So she started training George. And George, she would take tubes that had malignant melanoma cells in it. George picked up on this right away. And to really make sure that he was smelling the cancer, she'd hide the tubes. You know how you see them do this with drugs, with suitcases and all kinds of things? Well, George was able to find this at any time, any place. Every time he found what she had hidden, he would get a reward. And George was absolutely correct 100% of the time. Now, there was a nurse that they brought into this equation, and the nurse said, "This is amazing. I'd love to help you out with it." So this is what they did. The nurse's name was Kim, and they put a number of bandages all over her body, but only one bandage contained a sample of a melanoma cell. Now, what they wanted to do is make sure that he could tell the difference between the cancerous cell and healthy cells. Now, this is what Kim did before they did the initial test. She scrubbed down with ivory soap. Ivory soap has no perfumes around it, no perfumes in it. She made sure she didn't put on a deodorant that had any scent to it. The human body will have a multitude of odors. It's one of the reasons why hounds can find people so readily, because there's distinctive odors we all have. Now, they put the melanoma under the bandage on Kim's right shoulder. And after she was all set up, she was prepared. They brought George into the room, and George had to go to work. Now, he walked around her body. There were bandages on her feet, her knees, and her stomach. George ignored all of them until he reached her right shoulder. When he got to her right shoulder, he let his trainer know he had found it. And Pickle said, "I want you to show me. Show me where it is." And George, the schnauzer, lifted his paw and touched the bandage. They were thrilled. They had a breakthrough. With George's demonstration, and they did this more than once, they realized dogs could detect cancer. Now, this wasn't the only time they did it. Like I said, they did this over and over and over again. Sometimes she didn't have any of these cells on her in the bandages. Other times they would put it on different parts of the body. His success rate, again, was 100%. And do you know, the doctor, Dr. Cognetta, decided that he was going to use George with his patients. And on he had seven people that said, "Well, sure, we'll be happy to let George see if anything is cancerous on my body." Five patients, George found melanoma. On the sixth patient, George found melanoma in a location where the lab test was done, and they didn't find any cancer. Now, the doctors that were participating in this with Dr. Cognetta said, "We're going to retest this area," because they thought George was wrong. They found melanoma in just a fraction of the cells. The first test had missed it because the cancerous area was so tiny. But George hadn't missed it. George was right. Period. He knew what was there. And you know what? The seventh patient they did this with, there was no definitive finding of cancer from the doctors or from the lab, and even from George. However, a reexamination of the patient, they found a melanoma. Now, they also trained a golden retriever, and she was just as efficient. They said the dogs had a higher success rate than doctors and a higher success rate than laboratory tests. This is something that you would think that science would get excited about. Patient well-being, their welfare, detection in advance. You know what? They weren't interested. Everything that they had done seemed to fade away. But that changed in 2002. And I'll continue the rest of the story another time. We have some phenomenal tools with our animal friends. Wouldn't it be wonderful to be able to utilize them? And not only that, but they're really friendly. It'd be great to go into the doctor and have a golden retriever there and say, "Hi, how are you? Check me out." I think it would be a wonderful asset in a physician's office. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I've got other good things to share. You also can give me a buzz at 888-627-6008. We'll be right back.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now. Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Have you ever wanted to be in an environment of people with unique psychic abilities? There is a special event taking place on September 15th at 6 p.m. at the Roosevelt Hotel in Seattle, Washington, that will give you that opportunity. Dr. Pat Basile will be the guest speaker for this healing program. Michael Shane and Monty Burgess will be demonstrating their individual talents in mediumship and music and answering questions you might have. There will be a silent and live auction, wine tasting, and much more for you to enjoy. This fundraising event is for the healing and educational programs of the Ascension Foundation. Awaken to love and experience the gifts from spirit. Cost per person, $75. To pre-register or for more details, call 800-508-6437 or email info@michaelshane.com. Call now, 800-508-6437, a one-of-a-kind event you won't want to miss. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-627-6008. A wonderful poem, very short, sweet, to the point, by Leah Parson. Flowers sway in the breeze, scarlet leaves pirouette from the trees, dancing to the rhythm of September. Lovely, lovely poem. Well, we're going to be able to chat about your particular astrological forecast for fall of 2012. So let's just pop out with a couple of points of information here. How about starting with Aries and Libra? So I'll share those two with you today. Now, for those of you born under the sign of Aries, well, if you're looking for a romance, I think it might be coming along. So you've got the opportunity. You've been making some changes in your life, and you want to have a little bit more fun. And you're going to find that there are those people, whether they're related to you or not, you're going to make a point of spending more time with so that you can enjoy them. And, by golly, seems like money, that is going to be very much on your focus, and you may be traveling to acquire a better income or finding venues that are going to educate you so that you can look at becoming not just more prosperous, but looking at what is most important to you so that you can know that no matter where you are, what you're doing, you're going to be able to enjoy better things in life. Now, pay attention to your work environment, because there's going to be an opportunity for promotion. So two words that are very strong in the Boy Scout and Girl Scout motto is be prepared. Have a sense of expectation. Get those skill sets up. Investigate what your options are and know you have the opportunity to move into something better. For those of you born under the sign of Libra, well, you are sort of focusing on money quite a bit. And you're looking at acquiring a level of financial independence that you can depend upon. And if you are evaluating things right now, that's a very good position for you to put yourself into if you're born under the sign of Libra, because that'll allow you to make assessments to go into 2013 with a clarity that perhaps you've not really had up to this point. Now, you are an adventurer at heart, but you are a calculating adventurer. You say, I want to be sure that I'm going to be making choices that are going to serve me and serve me well. And I would say that's wonderful, but don't be afraid to dip into some new areas of interest. Explore something that maybe you've always been fascinated with to see where it can take you. Also, you are going to become more educated when it comes to working with money. In these economic times, you're saying, well, what may have worked 5 years ago, 3 years ago, may not necessarily be in the picture at this time. What can I do that can bring this financial independence that I so very much want and allow my money to compound for me? So the finances are really big in your picture for those under the sign of Libra. And I will just share those two with you today, and I will then go to the other signs tomorrow, and you'll find out more about what your fall potential is. Sugar maple, that's Wisconsin state tree. Are you aware that those sugar maple trees can live as long as 400 years? I had no idea that they could live that long. And they are so beautiful when they're changing colors. And the sugar maples in Vermont and back on the East Coast, they have all kinds of technical jargon that they utilize to explain how the chemistry creates the colors in the leaves. But I'll tell you what, some of that is so unimportant if you're not a scientist. Just take time to enjoy the beauty of what evolves during this time of the year, because it just will take your breath away. Up here in the Pacific Northwest, there are routes that take you up from western Washington into eastern Washington. And there are just areas like Blewett Pass that when you'll go up through it, in certain sections during the fall of the year, you have these canopies of color with trees that are like all gold. And then there's another route you can take where you feel like you're looking at a patchwork quilt that has been laid out over the mountains, vibrating with the scarlets and the golds in the various shades of brown. It's breathtakingly beautiful. And I think so many times we forget that nature is going through her preparation, and we should enjoy that process. And it is invigorating. The smells of fall, the colors, the cutting back of the foliage that has died away leaves a wonderful, wonderful feel in the psyche, I think. It's invigorating. Now here in the Pacific Northwest, we have to put on our jackets when we go out in the morning, even though it might be 80 degrees this afternoon. That's all right. There's this vibrancy. And it's as if Mother Nature is saying, take a lesson from this. There's times for cycles. There's times when you have to slow down. Take time to be mindful of what's going on. But don't forget, like the squirrels and like the ant, we have to be prepared. And I say that because right outside of my studio window, I have been watching the energetic, productive activity of a squirrel who has discovered a hole in an old oak tree in our backyard that still has wonderful growth on it. But the oak tree is going to give this squirrel an opportunity for a nest, and I'm watching it doing all of its busy with, because winter is going to be here before we know it. So we, too, have to prepare ourselves. We, too, have to realize there are cycles in life. We, too, need to realize that change is ever-present in our lives. And sometimes we just need to go with the flow and realize that every season has its place, as we do in this wonderful experience that we call life. This is Donna Siebel. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. As our guest was discussing earlier, you are an architect, and you can design and create your own environment. You can make your life what you want it to be. It might be a little bit different in its actual outcome, because you may find that there are some things that, well, cause a few shifts and changes that you hadn't planned on, but that's all right. You can get through it, and you can redesign whenever you want, adapting as necessary. I'm going to be back here tomorrow. We're going to be talking about abuses in education with Dr. Robert Rose. I think you're going to enjoy him quite a bit. Hope you can join me. Tell your friends. Invite them to come along and be a part of the Donna Siebel family. Have a fabulous day wherever you are, and know you're blessed. This is Donna. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.